Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, October 28th, 2018. This is episode 1536. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by JW Player, the most powerful and flexible video platform, letting businesses, including us, customize the video experience on their website. To learn more and get 50% off your business subscription, visit jwplayer.com/twit. And use the code TWIT at checkout. And by Helix. Helix is driven by a simple mission to empower every person to improve their life through DNA. Follow your DNA to a wealth of actionable insights into your ancestry, health, wellness, and more. Explore further at Helix, HELIX.com, and get 25% off when you use the promo code TECHGUY. And by Prylock Security. Teach your employees how to keep your company secure by avoiding phishing emails, candy drops, and social engineering. Show them how and why hackers attack with training from Prylock. Go to prylock.com/twit and use the promo code Leo to save 30%. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Hey, it's time to talk computers.
Oh, boy.
The internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz, all that rigmarole, anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside those areas, though, don't worry. You can still reach me. Just use Skype to call or something like that. Some sort of VoIP, voice over the internet out program. 888-827-5536. 36. We'd love to talk tech. Our website, techguylabs.com. And if you're watching or listening live, you can always visit the chat room where there are dozens of other people watching and listening live. And you can talk with them about what you're hearing. And that chat room is irc.twit.tv. New York Times article came out, I think, Friday. It's kind of what a title. A dark consensus about screens and kids begins to emerge in Silicon Valley. And beneath it, the quote, I'm convinced the devil lives in our phones. By the way, that quote comes from Athena Chavarria, who works as an executive assistant at Facebook. At the philanthropic arm, the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative. I'm convinced the devil lives in our phones and us are wreaking havoc on our children. And they quote a lot of people working in Silicon Valley who say, I won't let my kids have screens until they're older. Steve Jobs famously would not let his own children have iPads. Tim Cook said he wouldn't let his nephew join social networks. Bill Gates banned cell phones until his kids were teenagers. And Melinda Gates, his wife, said she wished they'd waited even longer. There are more and more people in Silicon Valley looking at how we use our phones. And, man, it's true, isn't it? When you go anywhere, just even walk down the street in a town or city, virtually everybody is either looking at her phone or holding a phone in their hand as if they're about to look at it. And I'm not judging. I do the same thing. And I do wonder what the impact of this is. On the other hand, and I'm really torn about it. On the other hand, I didn't have to worry about it. My kids are now 24 and 26. 10 years ago, when they were entering high school, this wasn't a problem. This only started to become a problem in the last 10 years. I do think that kids are growing up today. They are going to spend much of their life, even their work life, on screens, right? A facility with software, the ability to quickly navigate and communicate, isn't a bad thing. And after all, and I've heard some people say this, the kind of communication they're doing, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat or Instagram, is either pictures or prose, writing. It's better than just the, you know, the brief texts they used to use, right? I mean, they're kind of now writing stuff. And my friend Trey Ratcliffe, who's a photographer, says we're entering a new kind of society where images rather than words are the prime means of communication. For good or bad, but if that's the world they're growing up in, isn't it sensible? I mean, I don't know. They also quote a guy named Jason Toff. He ran Vine. Remember Vine? And he now works for Google. He says, you know, he lets his three-year-old play on the iPad. He says, it's no worse or better than a book. But I do feel, he says, there's a stigma. One reaction I got just yesterday was, doesn't it worry you that all the major tech execs are limiting screen time? And I was like, maybe it should, but I guess I've always been skeptical of norms. People are just scared of the unknown. So that's really crystallizes the two points of view. The one, and maybe it's a little old school, where we think, oh, you know, if you were of a certain age, your mother shouted, get outside and get some fresh air. Stop playing those stupid video games. You'll ruin your eyesight. Remember this one? What are you going to do? Play video games for a living? My mom didn't say that because I'm a little too old for that. But I remember those those shouts. What are you going to do? And it turned out okay. We had in my day, it was TV. I mean, everybody's worried about kids watching TV. I bet you before that, it was radio. I know that when the printing press and books became commonplace, they were very expensive early on, but once they became affordable and people had them, there were great fears that our children are ruining their minds reading. Because they weren't using their imagination anymore. all this time spent reading is keeping kids from, what is it, going outside, playing in fresh air and using their imagination. Well, you know, I guess it's maybe the cavemen. Maybe the cavemen said, son, stop painting on the walls. Get outside and find some meat. I don't know. They quote Renee DiResta. She's a security researcher on the board of the Center for Humane Tech. She says, this is another option. She won't allow passive screen time, you know, just sitting watching TV or playing a game, but will allow short amounts of time on challenging games. She has a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. Now, wait a minute. A 2-year-old? She wants them to learn how to write computer code, so she embraces their awareness of gadgets. Playing a building game, I guess like Minecraft, is allowed, but watching a YouTube video is not, unless it is as a family. Frank Barbieri, who's a San Francisco-based executive at the startup Pebble Post, which, by the way, is a direct mail advertising firm that watches what you do online and sends advertising based on that. He says he limits his 5-year-old daughter's screen time to stuff in Italian. Well, that's, you know, it's a good way to get the kid to learn Italian. Barbieri said, this is again the New York Times article. We have friends who are screen abolitionists, and we have friends who are screen liberalists. Well, now we have terms for it. He's read studies on how learning a second language at a young age is good for a developing mind, so it makes his daughter watch Italian language movies and TV show. you know, that's just, to me, that's like, it's okay. She's learning Italian. What do you think? I am so glad that my kids are old enough now. I don't have to think about it. I'm helping to raise a 15-year-old, our stepson, and he spends a lot of time on the screen, like hours a day, playing games on his computer. And if we say, get off the computer, he'd pull out the phone. But, it's hard for me to criticize when I'm standing right next to him playing Pokemon Go on my phone. Recently, I got rid of Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Just deactivate all the accounts so I don't have them on my phone. And I noticed that was a lot of screen time on my phone was spent doing those activities. But instead of looking up and smelling the fresh air and noticing the world around me, I just found a game so I could, at least it makes me walk around. They're really addictive. And I think that that's, you know, I don't know if the devil lives in our phones, but I do. It's pretty clear that what Silicon Valley has gotten very good at is creating content, whether it's social media or games, that draws us in, engages us, and keeps us coming back for more, right? They're very good at that. Is that a bad thing? It's good for their business. Is it good for us? 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Let's talk high tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. I have to say, you know, those of us who play Pokemon Go at least have to go outside and walk.
Yes.
According to Niantic, the folks who make Pokemon Go, in the first 6 months of Pokemon Go, players walked 8.7 billion kilometers.
But how many people were just sitting in the passenger seat of a car? Slowly in parking lots, like me.
You have to drive very slowly, though, right? If you go over 10 miles an hour, it doesn't count. So I think that they discourage that, you know. They want you to walk.
I admit
I maybe spent a little time on my Segway or bicycle playing Pokemon Go. But
you can find me in the Applebee's parking lot.
Do you play? Do you play Pokemon Go?
You got us hooked on it 2 years ago, remember? Yeah, on occasion.
I want you all to be hooked. That voice you hear, that's Kim Schaffer. She is our phone answering machine.
Well, I hear you have another name for me.
What is it?
It's been brought to my attention that one of the other shows you might have called me a serving wench.
Well, you were...
The serving wench has fulfilled your...
Oh, look, what is that?
Famous sausage rolls that Ian
brought. Oh, yum.
So these will be...
I mentioned that during your off hours, you work at an English pub.
My off hours, which is most of them.
Most of them. You only work here 6 hours a week. Okay, I admit it. But during that time, you have work in an English pub. And Ian, who is a Brit,
was very excited. Apparently he stops by. I've never seen him.
Yeah, he said there's a one on the way home, so yeah, it must be yours.
Oh, it is mine. It's for sure mine. He's mentioned it. It's the Mayflower.
The Mayflower. Aw.
Yeah. So I had a strange Saturday night shift last night, and I sacrificed my own nourishment and got you some sausage rolls.
Oh, I can't wait. Oh, Lord. I can't wait.
Yeah.
They're sausages and they're rolls. They're everything good.
They are a puff pastry with a sausage shoved inside.
Kim, our serving wench.
They would go better, I suppose. They eat, in the pub, they eat it with either HP sauce or Coleman's mustard, but I don't have either of those things.
Thank you. You're so
kind. I'll have to find some other condiment.
Meanwhile, can you serve us up some phone calls?
Sure. We've got Anne in Irvine, and her iPhone SE seems to be acting funny. She was on a very important call, and during that call, her phone called someone else.
What?
Yeah. Line three.
What? That doesn't seem right. Thank you, Kim. Hello, Anne. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thank you so much. I have no idea how this happened. I was on a really intense call, had it on speaker, so I wasn't touching the phone. I got interrupted three times, you know, when the phone puts the other person on hold and says, you know, do you want to take this call or whatever?
Yeah.
Three different times. And I yelled at them. They were family and my cleaning lady. And I told them, I can't talk now. Call me on the other line or wait an hour, whatever I said. Yelling at them, trying to get the other call.
So it picked up the other. So there's a button when you get a phone call on an iPhone. You get some choices. You can either hang up the other call and take the new one, or you could put the other one on hold and take the new one, or you can ignore it. And it's not, you're not touching it, and it's automatically putting the other call on hold and picking up.
Exactly. And the what I don't understand is when I call these people back, I had to eat crow because they didn't call me. My phone called them. While I was on this other phone call on speaker, I had the phone down. I was making notes. Well, I don't know what happened. It's never done this before. You know, developed a life of its own making calls.
And has it happened again?
No, it just happened those three calls on Friday while I was in the phone.
You were on speakerphone.
Yes.
And so you weren't touching it. It was just sitting on the counter.
Right. And then it rang you know, put the other person. At one point, it actually, I tried to put the phone on hold or call back or something, and it disconnected, so I had to call the other, the one I wanted back. But it made three separate, my phone called these people while I was on this phone call.
I've never heard of this happening before. So that's the good news. I don't know how it might have happened, unless there is one possibility that something you're saying is triggering Siri. Now, this has happened. In fact, you may remember a couple of months ago, we had a story about a couple who were having an argument, and the argument was somehow transcribed or recorded by the Amazon Echo and sent to an employee of the husband, who then called and said, I don't know why, but I just got an email with a recording of you guys having a fight. And it was, Amazon said, yeah, this happened, but it's hard to have it happen. It's a, you know, you have to say the trigger word, and then you have to say another word, this call this person. And is there any chance you mentioned any of these people's names in your conversation?
No, I did not. And the dickens is, frequently, I'll try to ask Siri for something, and she just doesn't
understand me. Yeah, of course not. It's, you know, it's the old story. You can never find a police officer when you need one, but the minute you go 5 miles over the speed limit,
there they are.
And it's the same thing. Siri never works when you want it to work. Mm-hmm. I don't. It probably isn't Siri, because that would be a really, to happen three times would be especially surprising. You know, you'd have to say something.
It called one person twice. And then it called another person.
Yeah, it does sound like it's a glitch in the phone. There's something wrong with the phone.
Should I take it to Apple and see what
The problem with all of this stuff is, unless you can make it happen again, they're going to say, well, we don't know what's going on. If you can make it happen in front of them, they'll go, oh, well, whatever that is, it happened. Mm-hmm. I would say if it doesn't happen again, just chalk it up to weird Halloween juju. But otherwise, if it happens again, I would bring it to Apple and say it's happened a couple of times. You know, one thing I'm really learning with all smartphones, even the iPhone, is occasionally restarting it every few days, refreshing it by turning it all the way off. And you know, with the iPhone now, it's complicated. You have to press the on screen on off button and the volume up button on the newer iPhones. On your old iPhone SE, I think you could just press and hold the power off button for a while. Slide to turn off, and then you can wait a second and immediately reboot it. That just clears everything out of the memory. And it's a computer, and you know that computers, when they're rebooted, sometimes work a little bit better. I mean, that's not much of a solution for you, but it just I can't imagine what it was that was happening. It's a weird glitch.
Yeah.
And let's hope it doesn't happen again. If it does, though, take it to the Apple store.
Go back to Apple.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Leo, thank you so much. I enjoy your show and learn all the time from you.
Bless you. Thank you so much for listening, Ann. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. And if anybody's had that happen, call, because maybe there is something going on. I've never heard of that. That is just very strange. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls coming up right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I feel the need for more cowbell. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Tallahassee, Florida is next. James is on the line. Hello, James.
Afternoon, or I guess it's still morning in your time zone.
You know, the geek world, there are no time zones.
Thank heavens for the clocks. It'll give you multiple time zones.
We are all in one time zone. There's a ballot measure in California. I think you guys did this in Florida, too, to stay on daylight saving time, which is illegal. You can't. But it's on the ballot. So it's mostly just people saying, stop the madness. Let's stop changing the clocks. We're going to change them next week again.
Well, I don't pay attention to politicians. They give me a headache.
Me, too. I'm with you. You know what? Let's just make this a safe zone. No politics zone. We'll just talk about gadgets and gizmos. What can I do to help?
Well, now that I'm finished picking up most of the hurricane yard trash.
Oh, boy.
I got a question, since I can now get back to being concerned about my computer.
Yes.
I'm looking for a suggestion for an application that will allow me to edit the XF metadata on the photos.
Oh, yeah.
I went through Wikipedia's comparison, tried all their suggestions, and was not impressed with any of them.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to pay for a commercial application, but I just want one that will allow me to, like, edit the copy or the comment section.
Yeah, this is
so I can describe what the picture is, and then be able to go search for certain keywords, you know, in the comments of the data.
This is a fairly simple thing to do. All photos taken on cameras have something called an extended information tags. They're fields, EXIF, that hold things like the location data, if that's turned on, date and time of capture, stuff like that. And there's an even further standard called IPTC that is comes from the wire agencies that can allow you to do even more data, titles, and all sorts of stuff. There's another, there's other information in there besides just the photo, like ICC information. So all of this is great information, and most photo library programs will automatically import that data and use it. You could sort by date and so forth. Sometimes if you've got tags in there, you can do searching. I don't know. Have you tried Photo Me? Try this one. It's free, so I like it. It's from Germany, so you know the Germans do good stuff.
Well, if I like I said, I went through Wikipedia's, and I tried about a dozen of them, so I very well could
it's
have tried.
You might have, and it's a fairly old one. I haven't used it in a while, but in fact, I think, I hate to say it, the ME in that might be for Windows Me, which would be a terrible, terrible thing. I don't, you know, what I typically will do is do it within Lightroom, because that's what I use to process my photos, and it gives you access to all the EXIF data.
Well, I own Lightroom. I guess one of these days I'll have to learn how to use it.
Yeah, it's kind of a cannon to shoot a horsefly. I don't think you need it just for EXIF editing. Anybody in the chat room have a favored EXIF editor? I would try this PhotoMe. It's photome.de. I've also used, I'm trying to remember, I don't think I've used it on Windows. It might be on the Mac, but there are a number of programs that let you quickly import raw images, because Lightroom is very bad at raw. And I've used a program called Fast Raw Viewer. And I'm pretty sure, yeah, it's for Windows as well. Now, it's not free, but I'm pretty sure Fast Raw Viewer will also let you modify the tags, the EXIF tags in there. So you can try before you buy. It's fastrawviewer.com. And that is kept up to date. That is a very up-to-date program. And the reason I like it is because Lightroom is so slow. You know, my raw photos on some of my cameras are 42 megabytes. They're very, very big files. And so per image. So it takes a while for Lightroom to load it and display it. Fast Raw Viewer is designed to really get you to quickly go through your photos and pick the ones you like. But it also gives you full access to the IPTC and EXIF data. So I think that would be, even though it's not, and maybe this is the problem because that Wikipedia listing is specifically EXIF editors, but almost all good photo processing tools, I think, will also give you access to the EXIF information.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to now break down, buy a camera. The only digital camera I got shoots JPEG.
No, this will look at JPEGs as well. Yeah, it has batch editing of IPTC data. One of the things I use this for is I like to put in to all the images I import from my camera, I like to put in my name, address, you know, copyright information, stuff like that. And this will do it in a batch format, so you can have a standard kind of tags that you put in. Try Fast Raw Viewer. I don't think you have to have raw files to use it. And it will let you do some sorting, I believe, by tags, by the tags that you put into the EXIF. So that was one of the things you wanted to do. That's another one, too. So there's what was it called? I've forgotten the name. The ME program. Phone ME, is it? I can't remember now. And then Fast Raw Viewer. Photo Me, it is. PhotoMe.de, because it's from Germany. And Fast Raw Viewer. And anybody who has a suggestion, you can call or you can put it in the chat room or you can go to the website, techguylabs.com, and add it as a comment. It's free to comment, free to visit. Just say, I have an answer for James. I know. Let's go to Rhode Island. Chris is on the line. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Leo. This is Chris from Rhode Island.
Nice to see you. Welcome.
Your memory is short.
It is?
Remember, I'm the guy who, it's amazing that that call with the phone dialing out came today while I'm sitting on hold.
Did that happen to you?
Remember, I called you twice and my phone used to dial out at the middle of the night.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah.
It's not exactly the same situation. I mean, you weren't in the middle of a call.
Oh, it did that, too.
Oh, it did that, too. Now, was it an iPhone?
No, it was an Android Note 3.
Yeah.
So,
did you ever figure out why it was doing that?
I finally moved on to another phone.
You ditched it.
Yeah, I couldn't handle it anymore.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Maybe it's more common than I thought.
When I tried to find answers to it, it's not carrier specific and it's not phone specific.
Oh,
so
weird.
I wanted to send it to Father Robert and see if he could dig it into it.
It's ghosts. Well, Robert now is at the Vatican, but I think you can still send him stuff. I think the Pope allows him some free time.
That's water under the bridge. I did not search the Tech Guy website, and I probably should have first, but I have the Note 9 now.
Love it.
And so do I. But I get this pop-up that says Amazon has stopped working.
Yeah.
And it goes away if you touch the screen, but it's just getting frustrating to see it. Have you heard anything?
I've seen this with other programs. Essentially, the programs that are running in the background will continue to run in many cases unless something goes wrong. And then you get a notification, oh, it's crashed. It's basically crashing. So I don't have that. Is it the Amazon, main Amazon shopping app that you have on there? What Amazon app is it?
I have Amazon, the Amazon shopping app. I have the music.
But do you know which one it is? Is it the Amazon shopping app that's crashing?
It doesn't identify what it is. It just says Amazon has stopped. I could look it. I had an urge to call you.
It might be music. Do you use music a lot? Because that runs in the background. That's most likely what it is. I would suggest deleting it and reinstalling it. Might just be a bad install of that application. I haven't seen that before. I don't think. My memory's short. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I should mention our fine advertiser. If you watch the show on our website, you probably have noted that fine player we've got there at twit.tv, like twit.tv/TTG for the tech guy. That's JW Player. And I really like JW Player. You know, we used to just embed YouTube videos, but the problem is it's got that big YouTube branding. And then after the show is over, you get another YouTube video, sometimes inappropriate. I thought there's got to be a better way. For years, we've been using JW Player, the most powerful and flexible video platform. In the earliest days, it was a Flash player. Now it's fully compliant HTML5. It works on every browser. It works in every situation. It's just awesome. You're using it. You've used it many times. Even if you haven't watched the video at twit.tv, top publishers like the Washington Post use JW Player, Business Insider, Vice. You wouldn't know because they customize it to match their brand and you get a seamless experience. But I'll give you a little tip. If you go to, say, I don't know, twit.tv/TTG, the tech guy, and you look at that video right at the top there, that's the yesterday's episode, right-click on it, it'll say JW Player. It'll say what version it is. And you can do that on many sites. 500,000 sites rely on JW Player to deliver their videos to audiences. If you want to deliver video on your website, you should do it too. Whether you want to upgrade from YouTube, if you're a large-scale publisher or broadcaster and you want to maximize video ad fill rates and CPMs, JW Player has a solution for every business. We've been very happy with it. We love it because of the API, which gives us analytics, automatically and easily. We can also enhance functionality simply. It is the fastest player. You know, I interviewed the creator of JW Player about a month ago, and we talked about the fact that people are very impatient these days. If your video doesn't start up, what did he say? I think he said you lose 50% of your audience in the first 5 seconds. That if it doesn't start in 5 seconds, half of the audience just goes, oh, I'll go to the next video. That's a huge number. That's why we use JW Player. It starts instantly with no buffering. They've eliminated buffering. It makes your customers happy. It's fully customizable, so it looks like your brand. And, of course, if you run video ads, you can maximize your fill rates and CPMs with JW Player. Here's what you do. Go to jwplayer.com/twit. If you use the code TWIT at checkout, you'll get 50% off your business subscription. 50% off! Now, this is a limited-time exclusive offer for TWIT TV listeners, so be sure to check it out today. jwplayer.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT at checkout. jwplayer.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT at checkout. We love JW Player. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll shake you all day long, my friends. Tom in Chicago, Illinois. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
Well, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. You know, I was just not going to say that because everyone asks how you're doing.
I don't mind. It's okay.
Okay.
It's an automatic thing, and it's fine with me.
Yeah, okay. Well, LTL, 3TC.
W6, TWT.
No.
What is LTL, 3BC?
3TC.
What is it?
Long-time listener, third-time caller.
That's the three through me.
Yeah, I knew it.
Welcome.
Do I sound okay?
You sound great. What are you on?
Well, I'm using my AirPods with my iPhone.
Oh, this sounds really good.
Because the first time I called you, I just used my iPhone about 3 years ago, and it sounded awful.
Yeah, no, this sounds clear as a bell.
And last year, I used my Plantronics USB and called on Skype. And when I listened to it, I sounded so hot, it was ridiculous. So the third time's a charm.
Yeah.
The reason I'm calling you is I belong to an older men's organization. And I've been trying to get my fellow members to put in their emergency information in the health app in their iPhone.
Yes.
And I point out that the emergency technicians can open it up and find out this information without knowing their code.
It's called ICE, in case of emergency. And it's really important. You'd go into the health app on your iPhone, and there's a section for in case of emergency. And you're right, they don't have to unlock the phone, which makes it – and, in fact, I know first responders know enough to when they see a phone. I've talked to first responders. They say the most important thing we want is not blood type or allergies. Frankly, we want somebody to call. But they will, of course, pay attention to, you know, allergies. They don't want to give you something that will make you sicker. So that is a very important thing to have, ICE.
Yeah. But then other people say, well, gee, I have an Android. How do I do that? And I go, I don't know. And I've Googled it, and I haven't found any way that you can open up an Android phone, like, without a code.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's nice on the iPhone because it's there before you get into it. And first responders know how to do it. The problem is there's so many different Android phones. And the rules for how to do this vary depending on which Android phone you have. I think that is a big deal. I don't know if there's a standard way to do it anymore. There used to be on Android in the early days. One way to do it, this will depend very much on which Android they have. Samsungs, for instance, have owner info section that when the phone is locked will scroll across the phone, and at least that would give them some information. You can also on a Samsung phone update your profile in the contacts app, and you'll notice there's medical information in there. And then you can also set ICE emergency contacts. I think that's there by default on Samsung phones. So you want to add that. That's very important. But look at the lock screen message. Most, not all, unfortunately, many Android phones have a lock screen message. and you could put information there. If nothing else, put a contact phone number, because that, as I said, the first responders, that's the thing they tell me that they, and if you're a first responder, let me know if I'm wrong on this, but I've talked to a couple and they said, look, what we really want is that emergency contact number. So at the very least, you know, put that in your lock screen message. You could say ICE and a phone number, and people will know what that means. The first responders will know. And if you don't have that feature, the one last thing you can do, and this is true on any phone, you know, you have a lock screen image, the thing that shows up. You can use a photo editor with that lock screen image and put some information there. Now, remember, everybody will be able to see that. But so you know, consider that. But almost any phone will have a lock screen image, and at the very least, you could do, you know, if you do ICE, that's in case of emergency. People know what that means, and then a phone number, that's getting you 90% of the way there, as long as that person will answer.
I should just tell my friends to get an iPhone.
Yeah, this is something Apple's done really, really well. Android, the problem is Android is not, unlike iOS, it's not a unified ecosystem. There's lots of different Android phones and lots of different ways to do it. So on the iPhone, it's very easy.
This summer I was in an amusement park and on a roller coaster, and my phone started ringing. So when I got off, I went and looked at it, and it was a local call. And I thought, well, maybe this is my hotel. I better call it. So I call, and I get the police. And they said, we just had an emergency call from this phone.
Wow.
And I said, oh, my God, no, I just had it in my pocket. You know, I must have done it. I'm so sorry.
It was the roller coaster.
Okay. She goes, are you on the Intimidator? I go, yes, I am. She goes, oh, good. Our GPS is really good.
They knew exactly where you were. And you know,
yeah, they probably knew I was going down the big hill.
It's scary enough. You could have had a heart attack on that thing. Maybe they knew. You're exactly right. Tell everybody you know and everybody in your men's group. That is a very, especially as we get to a certain age, that's a very important thing to have on there, is your in case of emergency information. But unfortunately, with Android phones, there's no single way to do it. So Samsung phones do have a way, and other phones, if you at least in the lock screen, put it in a lock screen message or on the lock screen as text.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. I'm going to look here. Somebody's saying, I'm going to look on my Pixel phone, which is kind of the default Android phone. Somebody's saying that they also have an ICE entry under contacts. So I'm going to search for ICE. No, all I'm getting is ice cream stores. That's not going to help my heart health. Yeah, but it's really a great idea, because we all now have phones in our pockets all the time. It's a good thing. Just remember, if you do put it on the lock screen message or edit the photo, the lock screen photo with the phone number, that anybody can see that. I don't know if that's a bad thing or a good thing, but that's the case. Scooter X saying Android 9 has, which is Android Pie, the latest, emergency information section for access on the lock screen. Excellent. So that fewer than 1% of all Android phones are on Android 9. However, if you are, it's in there, I guess. I'll have to figure out where do they keep that, Scooter X? He's in our chat room. Is that in contacts? It should be more obvious. And on the iPhone, and I know most people have iPhones, more than half of smartphone users in the U.S. are on an iPhone, just go to the health application, which is on all iPhones, and you'll see in the health application there's a place that you can put emergency medical information. They call it medical ID. Fill that all out. That's all you need to do. It's that little asterisk on the right at the bottom. Medical ID, put in contact information, blood type, medications, allergies, reactions, that kind of thing. And then first responders will be able to get to that immediately without unlocking your phone. And that's life or death. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come right after this. Since settings under emergency. Thank you. I get confused. Let me do this real quickly here. Let's see. So here's settings. Emergency. There you go. Emergency information. It's in system about phones. Yeah. There you go. There you go. Whoops. So fill this out. Oh, there it is. Good. So search for emergency in settings. I'll say that when we come back. And then under the about phone, adding medical information and emergency contacts can help first responders in an emergency. Anyone can read this information from your lock screen and dial your contacts by tapping their names without unlocking your phone. Huge. Huge. Look at this. And you could see I haven't filled mine in. So I will do that. That's awesome. And Out of Sync says Android N has that as well. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. You can still reach us. Just use Skype or something like that. Skype out to call that number. It's toll-free. Shouldn't cost you anything. 8888-ASK-LEO. The website, techguylabs.com. That's where we stick everything. And, you know, we're going to make this the tip of the week because this is so important. And thanks to our chat room. I think Scooter X and others in the chat room have pointed out that on the latest versions of Android, Nougat and Pi 8 and 9, there is an emergency contact information section, ICE, in case of emergency. And the way to find it is to open the settings and search for emergency. And you'll see under About Phone, at least on a stock Android 9 phone, which I'm using right now, the Pixel, you'll see under System About Phone, there's an emergency information section. You can fill that out. Make sure you fill out the personal information, things like blood type, allergies, medications, organ donor, and then add at least one phone number, two if possible, for emergency contacts. And the first responders know that they can read that information if your phone is locked by swiping up on the lock screen to the pin. You could try this yourself. At the bottom of the pin pad, there's the word emergency. I always just assumed that was to make an emergency call, but when you press it, you'll see emergency information, and you can hit the emergency information that way. So that is a really good feature to enable on modern Android phones. Samsung has a similar feature. iPhones with the latest versions of iOS, I think it started, I don't remember when it started, but maybe iOS 11. You go to the Health app. And in the Health app, there's a medical ID section. You can fill that out, and it'll have all the information that first responders need. If you're unresponsive, but you've got your smartphone with you, they can get the information they need. And that does make a big difference in getting help in an emergency. So that's great. We'll make that the tip of the week. You don't have to follow it all. Just go to techguylabs.com at your leisure, and we'll walk you through that on as many different phones as we can find. I'll get Josh to work to find that out on as many different phones as you can. TechGuyLabs.com is our website. It's free. There's no sign up. There's no, you know, no, I don't want any information about you. It's fine. Just go there and use it. Enjoy it. It's there for you. Phone number again, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Ted in Camarillo called, or Camarillo. Hi, Ted.
Good morning, Leo.
Good morning, Vietnam. How are you?
There you go. So I've got a question for you.
Yes.
I've got an article here titled "Opioids Haven't Solved Chronic Pain. Maybe Virtual Reality Can." And the article describes Cedars-Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles using virtual reality to treat chronic pain.
Yeah.
And so they reference a company in Beverly Hills called VR, Applied VR.
Yeah.
That has a package of a Samsung package virtual reality for about $800. But then the problem is their software costs you somewhere between $1,800 and $3,000.
Oh, jeez. Isn't that a shame?
So I've spoken to several psychiatrists at UCLA to see if they know anything about it. And I asked my son, who's a software developer in Austin, if he knew anything about it. And nobody seems to know. And I'm in a bathroom shaving, and I have you on the radio. Suddenly, my light bulb went on.
Oh, maybe Leo can help.
Why don't we ask Leo?
I will put in the show notes a link to an article from the National Institutes of Health. Of course, the United States, NIH is a very reliable, a trusted source, and there's a paper here from fairly recently on virtual reality and pain management, current trends and future directions, that does describe, because we don't really understand the mechanism why this would work, but it's very much being studied and with some success. And the question is what it is, what software are they using, how are they doing it, and how does it work? And this article, I think you'll find a little more informative than the newspaper article about this.
There's a program called Bear Blast that they use, evidently.
Yeah.
And what it does is it occupies the mind in such a way
right.
that it can't at the same time transfer pain signals to the brain.
Yeah. So they mention in this scholarly paper that the number of NIH-funded studies investigating the use of VR for pain management has doubled. One of the techniques is biofeedback, deep breathing, stuff that we know has already worked, but using VR or VR plus hypnosis, VR plus breathing exercises seem right. to have some results. I also have seen VR used in treatment of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and that seems to also be effective. I always would caution, VR is the hottest thing in technology today, and so I'd always caution a little bit, when it's the flavor of the month that, but it does, it is very interesting. I see the article that you're referring to, and it's certainly a lot better than opioids and opioid addiction, but you're right that getting that software is an interesting challenge. And my guess is that none of these techniques work without a doctor present. It's not something you could take home and do. There's also an article on PLOS, a scholarly article, The Impact of Virtual Reality on Chronic Pain. I can put that in the show notes as well. So there's a lot of studies on this. And they seem to agree that it does help, but almost anything helps. I think
it's not just the flavor of the month, Leo, because they mention Hunter Hoffman, who is evidently a VR pioneer.
Yeah,
launched a study back in early 2000.
Oh yeah, it's been going on for a while. That's right.
So it's been around, and now it seems to be getting fine tuned. And with the concentration on opiate deaths negative impacts, that it's coming into regular use, including some other hospitals.
The PLOS article, The Impact of Virtual Reality on Chronic Pain, comes from, I'm not sure where, but they talk about the software that they used in this study. The VR application is called COOL, with an exclamation mark. It's an interactive journey through a fully immersive 360-degree virtual reality fantasy landscape. Trees, hills, snow scenes, caves, flames, and otters. Otters! The speed is slow and constant, cannot be manipulated by the participant. There's ambient music delivered by the application through headphones. The music isn't so loud that the participants can't hear the experimenter, and they can still converse. But by traveling through the landscape at a constant speed, participants noted a significant reduction in pain. So this is another software program. I don't know where you would get these. I'm sure you mentioned the price, and a lot of times these specialized programs are extremely expensive. But that doesn't sound like a particularly complicated experience. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody's made these available, to the general public.
I was thinking, and that's where Ask Leo came in.
Yeah, and I don't know. I haven't seen these, but if anybody, basically, it sounds meditative. If anybody knows where you could get cool exclamation mark or this other Bayer program, let us know. I don't know off the top of my head. 8888 Ask Leo. And I'll put these science journal articles in our show notes so you can read them at your leisure. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it's a great subject. I also imagine that we could see people doing this. Imagine going to the dentist, and instead of, you know, thinking about the drill, you're in a VR environment. I think there'd be certain advantages. There is AppliedVR.io, which is a healthcare platform. But yeah, it's just overcharged like this, like crazy. But this is designed to be used by practitioners, physicians, and hospitals. That's interesting. It is AppliedVR.io. They say free trial. But I bet you that free trial, you can get it's for your practice. Comes with the Gear VR, which is not expensive. You get a Galaxy phone, that's about $1,000, and the Gear VR is another $100 on top of that. And then they have a variety of content modules. But you'd have to be a healthcare provider to get that. Seems like these are all just meditative kind of I'll put the NIH study in the show notes here. Let me put it in the chat room for James. P.A. Wilds in our chat room is an anesthesiologist. Have you heard of this being used, P.A. Wilds? Know any good contractors? He says the problem with the VR thing, they're not blind studies. There's no control group. So that always yields positive results. Yeah, that makes sense. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We have a anesthesiologist, a medical anesthesiologist, a physician in the chat room, who says that meditation and relaxation is also very helpful with pain control. The ability to step back and observe the pain, he says, is very valuable. Anxiety aggravates pain. So I think there's an openness to a lot of different techniques. You know, VR is trendy, and you know we're always looking at technologies to do more than, you know, just play games. And so I think that's a good attempt, but we'll see. We'll see. David in Burbank. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, David.
Hi there. How you doing?
I'm well. What can I do for you?
Let's see. My call today is about live streaming.
Okie dokie.
So I've been asked to contribute my information or help, if I could. I have a bunch of video cameras. And so my question, I guess, is to do a live stream, because I know you can do it from your phone. I see people do it. But from a video camera, would I have to have Wi-Fi? I mean, because my cameras do have GPS, but not Wi-Fi.
Yeah, no, you don't need Wi-Fi. You need a long cable. What we do is I stream everything, all the shows we do, including this show. And we have consumer-grade camcorders. Those are fine. But in order to stream them, those are the smallest expense. You then connect them to a switcher so that you could switch cameras. Now, if you just want to stream a single camera, that's a little bit easier. But if you want to have more than one camera, you need a switcher. We use a fancy switcher called the TriCaster from a company called Newtek, N-E-W-T-E-K. Do you want to do multiple cameras or a single camera?
Well, I'd start with one, and then later on, if I upgraded, I could certainly do multi-camera, but just to be able to do one to start, so I'd run the cable into a laptop and then run the Wi-Fi from there?
That's right.
So what's the software?
Well, you need video capture software, and there are a lot of programs that can do this. Where are you going to stream it to? That's the other question.
I guess to the internet.
Well, yeah, but... there has to be an endpoint.
That far yet.
Yeah, well, that's a big part of it. So, I'll make a couple of recommendations. Facebook offers this for free, and YouTube offers this for free. Okay. Those are two very good choices. And what you do will be kind of predicated on what website you're streaming to, because they have different software to do that with. In general, a very good cross-platform solution is called Wirecast. That's from a company called Telestream, and that's a software-based or hardware-based if you want to get a switcher. But you start with a software-based solution running on a PC. They can talk about the hardware that you'll need. And then what happens is, so the way this works is the camera is connected via wire, you know, often HDMI, into your computer. The Wirecast software captures the video and then has to compress it and turn it into a format that the site will accept, whether it's YouTube or Facebook or, I mean, I can go on and on. There are many, many companies. We do this with a variety of different companies. So you need to have it in a format that they will say, oh, yeah, that's fine. That works with our live stream. And then they'll accept it. So the software is capturing it, converting it, and uploading it all in real
kind
time.
Kind of like if I'm capturing footage to Final Cut Pro.
Kind of. Except that it's done. The difference is it's done in live, in real time, right? It's done live.
Is that the only one that's available, the Wirecast?
Oh, no. There's dozens of these. This is a very popular area. But first thing I would suggest you do is figure out where on the internet you want this to appear.
It's going to be for a temple service, so yeah. I imagine probably Facebook.
Facebook's a good start. Everybody has to have a Facebook account. YouTube is maybe a little bit more accessible because you don't need an account to view it. As long as you can get online, you can view it. YouTube Live. I've recommended in the past this might be an interesting way to do it. Is there a budget at all, or you're just getting the job because you have cameras?
Well, yeah, they asked me, and then I said, well, I really don't know.
Let me look into it. Yeah,
I'll ask Leo.
Yeah, smart man. So I've used a thing called, and I mentioned this on our last show, somebody was asking a similar question, a camera called Mevo, M-E-V-O, at getmevo.com. This is kind of an all-in-one solution. It does stream via Wi-Fi to your iPhone or iPad or Android phone. You then use that, and it's cool because it's a single camera, about $500, but it's shooting 4K. It's shooting a much higher resolution image than you stream, and you can move around within that larger image to zoom in on people. It'll even do it automatically. When somebody talks, it'll zoom in on them. When they move, it'll follow them. It's really interesting technology, and that streams to Vimeo Livestream, which is the company that makes it, Facebook Live, YouTube Live, Periscope, Twitter. There are a lot of different places you could put this. My suggestion, if it's temple service, you don't want to say, oh, you have to be a Facebook member to see this. I'd put it on YouTube. I think that's the most accessible. And this will stream right to YouTube. You basically hook up the camera. It'll capture the sound. It has a good array mic, so you don't even need a separate mic, although you could if you wanted to.
And then, HDMI out?
It does not have HDMI out. It goes, I think it goes, I'm trying to remember, I have this thing and I don't use it that often. I think it goes wirelessly.
It's called Mevo?
Mevo, M-E-V-O, at getmevo.com. The nice thing about this, for a temple service, it's unobtrusive, it's small. You could put it on a tripod fairly close to the front of the temple and sit down anywhere else in the temple using an iPhone or an iPad and literally, effectively switch cameras, move the camera around, follow the cantor, follow the rabbi, and it's just this little tiny cylinder that wouldn't, be obvious at all. And so that really gives you some great production capabilities without a lot of work. It's really designed for this kind of use. I think it's a very good choice.
Great.
Yeah.
Great information.
My pleasure. Getmevo.com. I've recommended it before. $500, but then, if you have to set up cameras on tripods, they get in the way. It's a big deal. People say, well, are you making a movie here? What's going on? This way, it's unobtrusive. It almost looks like a little security camera or something. It's not very, but it gives you a great result. It will record directly into an SD card on the Mevo cam, but typically what you'll do is have it send it wirelessly to a smartphone or tablet, which then uploads it to YouTube. And it can all be done in real time so people can watch the services as they happen. With a hardware connection, it's a little more complicated. Plus, you've got wires. This way you don't have wires. You don't have anything getting in people's way, nothing to trip over. I think it's a very good solution. There are lots of ways to do this, obviously. This is something people are doing a lot of. Live streaming. It's interesting. I mean, everybody's doing TV all of a sudden. I feel bad for the networks. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you have a question, a comment, or an answer, if you're doing something similar and you have a good way to do this, everybody has a different technique for doing this. Give us a ring or go to the website, techguylabs.com. We'll put all the links to everything I mentioned there. And you have a chance to comment after the fact. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, coming up right after this. Yeah, Boz says, I go to a mega church and they shoot services with 5 cameras, crane, dolly, 2 fixed cams and a wide view cam. Yeah, you get beautiful production that way, but it's very expensive. Very expensive. Hey, let me talk about something not expensive, but a lot of fun. I'm going to talk about Helix and getting your DNA. Wouldn't you love to do that? Helix is driven by a simple mission. They want everyone to know about the genes that make you you. From profound discoveries to playful exploration, Helix offers a variety of DNA-powered products that can help you and your family live richer, fuller lives. The keys to accessing huge amounts of information about you come from these simple DNA kits. I just did this Helix. I haven't gotten the results back yet. I'll show you the Helix kit. This one is for Geno 2.0. It comes from National Geographic. But it can help you, well, it'll even say in here, with your ancestry, health, fitness, nutrition, family, and entertainment. You could tailor a better diet, explore your continental ancestry, fine-tune your exercise regimen, understand and manage your sleep patterns. You can learn about food sensitivities. Compare yourself to world-class athletes. Find better wines for your particular palate. Yes, you can figure out what wine you like or get help losing weight. All you have to do is spit into this vial. It's really simple. You spit and fill it up to that line. So it's a simple thing to do. There's no need to go to a doctor or draw blood or anything like that. You seal it up. You mail it in their special package they provide for you. So it's a postage paid. And then a few weeks later, you'll get your analysis. After your sample's been sequenced, you'll be able to receive insights into a huge variety of topics. You don't have to worry about, you know, submitting another sample. They keep the DNA analysis. So when you order your first product, you're going to get everything you need to get started. This is it. This is the kit. And you register it online at the Helix site. And then that way you can look up all your data. It's so much fun. I have to say, we're doing this. I'm having my son do it. My wife has done it. Let your curiosity guide you as Helix accompanies you through your past and leads to your future. This is your journey. Where you go and what you learn is entirely up to you. Your story, our story, the human story. Follow the DNA. Learn more at Helix, helix.com, helix.com, and get 25% off if you use our offer code TechGuy. Helix. Don't forget the offer code TechGuy. And as soon as I get my results back, I'll show you. You can learn all about me. That magic music, the Paul Simon Kodachrome, tells me in my mind that Chris Marquardt has joined us all the way from beautiful United States of America. He's in Rochester, New York this week. What are you doing? Isn't that where Kodak used to be?
That is where Kodak still is. They're still the George Eastman Museum, which is neat. Amazing. I had the pleasure a couple of years ago to get a tour of their technical vault, which is normally closed for people, and it has the entire history of photography. But there's neat. Also Kodak Alaris, which is their film production. That's where they still make Kodak film.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
You, and you, of course, Absolutely. Have a great book on film photography. So this is kind of Mecca for you, right?
It is. The Film Photography Handbook. Yeah, I'm totally into that.
Nice.
But yeah, this is what I'm doing right now. But this is not, this as a segment is not about Kodak.
This is about your last trip. It's your old pictures. So you were where?
Old, yeah, just a week old, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Morocco.
Spent
2 weeks in Morocco with a group of photographers. And, we explored from Marrakesh to Fez to Chefchaouen to Tangier. We just explored different areas. We were in the Sahara, in the sand dunes. We did a photo tour that I took the group to lots of different places. We're 14 people in total, 5 cars. So we were a little car caravan going through Morocco. And I thought I would pick 3 of the photos in my photo album. There's an online album at tftf.com/MoroccoPics, MoroccoPics, that has them on it. And I would like to tell you the story behind 3 of those pictures.
Awesome.
You might enjoy that. So the first one, I made a shortcut, tftf.com/M01.
Okay.
And it's a photo of a cloud at night over the Marrakesh Medina, which is kind of the central square, the markets. And we were there. We spent the evening there. We walked around. And then the moment, pretty much the last half hour, we looked back. And there was this big white cloud over that space. And in that big white cloud, there was lightning.
Wow.
And it there was a flash every, I don't know, 10 seconds. It was a really amazing kind of thing to see. And I thought, I have to kind of document this in some way. So I took the iPhone out and I shot some video of it. But I also, of course, had my DSLR with me. And I ended up, trying to figure out how can I shoot this. I didn't have a tripod. I didn't have anything to put the camera on. So
it's dark, right? I mean, it's nighttime.
And it's nighttime, so there are some lights down on the ground. But how do we capture that and the people with enough light and without messing it up in
this
some way?
This is a challenging photo. I'm looking at it right now, and the sky's got a big, bright lightning bolt in it, but the people are on the ground. It's dark. The city, you've got different how did you do it?
Well, it's one photo, so it's not a montage. It's one single photo, and I thought, okay, how can I get this lightning? And, of course, you get lightning by using a longer exposure. But then on the other hand, how do you make the lightning, how do you make the exposure not so long that you cannot handhold it anymore? And I decided on 1/5 of a second. Ah. And 1/5 of a second is kind of still handholdable with a wide angle lens that I used, which I knew would get some motion into the people, which isn't the problem. It probably adds a bit of flavor to the picture.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
And just keep shooting bursts.
Wow.
As in click, 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 click.
And hope in one of those 5-second moments you'll get a lightning bolt.
I took 200 pictures there.
Wow.
To get this one. So I filled up part of my card. And
wow.
When I came back, I looked at them and there was the one photo that worked out. So
Isn't that great?
I'm so happy because that is a photo that is something that doesn't happen, you know? It doesn't happen. It won't happen. I won't see something like that again in the rest of my life. I'm pretty sure about that. So
every photographer, I think, has that one shot that was just perfect timing. And what's a good thing to remember is you had to take a lot of pictures to get that one. I think that's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. Very nice.
Okay, second one I want to talk about is tftf.com/M02. And it's a picture of camels in the desert in the sunrise. Mm-hmm. And it's a silhouette. And the sun is just rising behind them between the feet of one of the camels. There's clouds in the sky. And it's just this kind of a magical light and a magical moment. And, of course, the things you have influence over in a shot like this is the time when you're there. So we knew when the sunrise would be. You have influence over your location. From where do you shoot it? So you have to make sure to shoot this from a low angle so you get a nice silhouette of the camels. You have influence over the focal length, like how many millimeters you shoot. I shot really wide angle because I wanted that big sky in there. You have influence over the exposure. In this case, I made it a silhouette, so I chose the according exposure. There's a little starburst, which, you know, when the sun gets this little star shape, you can do this by shooting with a very small aperture. And the only thing you don't really have influence over are camels, people, and where they are. Or do you?
What?
This is the question.
What, did you now, tell them, okay, lead the camels this way, I'm going to be there?
For this shot, we actually hired the camels and
you're kidding.
The guide. No, we
don't,
did.
Don't
we had
tell
to
anybody
because,
that.
No, I'm just telling you that, okay?
Oh, okay, just between us.
And then all of a sudden you have influence over, okay, are those camels well spaced? You know, do they look nice? Is the distance between the camels right? Are they at the right point in that shot?
Folks,
and we had them walk back and forth.
You are learning the secrets of master photographers. They never.
Well, at least of this shot.
That's pretty impressive. Oh, it's a beautiful.
So this
shot.
This was a photo shoot. We set up a photo shoot. It was planned.
Yeah.
And paid for, and the guy, one of the guys is in the front of the camels is one of our drivers, just
it's
dressed up with a turban
awesome
and
picture.
White garb. But if you don't know that, hey, it's the right shot, and you need the camels closer because we want to really see them.
Yeah, I mean the silhouette's amazing. So did you get a model release from the camels?
No. Okay, last shot, if we have time for that,
yeah,
tfttf.com/MO3, tfttf.com/M03, which is a shot of a Moroccan swimming pool, which is just perfect from the lighting, the color contrast. You have these blue straight water, it's undisturbed. You have the reflection in there. You have the orange-blue color contrast. And that shot, I just walked into that pool. It's in a hotel there. The light was like that. I raised the camera. I took the shot. I just got lucky. So no preparation for that. It's just one of those things you see on the side of the road pretty much and capture.
Now, I should point out that, by the way, they're all gorgeous. This whole catalog, you were there how long? 2 weeks? You've got fewer than 20 pictures in here. No, more than that. Maybe 30, 40 pictures. How many shots did you take?
Around 3,000. So there's quite
makes me feel good.
Editing process. There's a pretty strict editing process.
Makes me feel
a lot
good.
Of those pictures are not in the public because the secret is the majority of everyone's photos are bad photos.
Yeah. Always said the best bakers leave a few cakes on the sill. Chris Marquardt, he's at discoverthetopfloor.com. And we'll talk again next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No, it is the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Enter tech guy. Exit bugs. Gary, Rockford, Illinois. Hello, Gary.
Hey, Leo. I just got a question to ask you. I've been very frustrated on this. I'm in the chat, so people can help me out here with this. But anyways, I downloaded Linux Mint. I downloaded it on the UEFI side of the BIOS of Windows. And anyways, it kind of, screwed up the whole thing with, rebooting it and booting it back up. So anyways, I tried to delete it off of the Windows partitions and all that. However, it's staying in the BIOS. I've tried and tried and tried to get it off. The reason why I'm trying to get it off is because Windows, it's not, the Windows side is not taking and letting me download the Windows updates now. It keeps on saying errors and all that. So yeah. I don't know what to do here.
Yeah, so what? This is a master class in installing Linux. It's really easy to... Linux is easy to install if, like Windows, you want it to occupy the whole hard drive. But what you wanted to do is a little more advanced, which is what we call a dual boot. You didn't want to get rid of Windows. You wanted both. And unfortunately, when you install another operating system on top of Windows, they can coexist. Where you get into trouble is in boot up, the booting process. And so one thing that Linux does, it'll say, oh, and I'm sure Ubuntu did this. That's a very popular Linux Mint anyway, is based on Ubuntu. But I'm sure Mint did this, a very popular Linux. It says at some point during install, oh, I see you have Windows installed. Do you want to make a dual boot? Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and what happened is that I think, I've noticed it, is that it's actually putting the grub or whatever.
Yeah, that's the boot manager, right. So if grub could still manage the boot, but I think if you do uninstall Ubuntu or Mint as you did, now you've got a problem because you probably uninstalled some important grub features. It's booting up into Windows just fine?
Yeah, it does. What has happened is that it's lingering on the Windows boot menu, and yeah. It doesn't want to go taking.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense because you can't you're manually doing it. So right. It's an easy thing to what you want to do is to repair the master boot record. You want to repair the bootloader, and Windows will do that for you. It's an easy thing to do. There are a couple of ways to do it. One would be to get into Windows recovery menu. So while you're booting up, tap F8. In the recovery menu, you'll click on Troubleshoot, Advanced Options, and get into the Automatic Repair menu. And then there's a tool called bootrec.exe that will restore your boot record. It's enough of a complicated process, and I want you to follow the steps in order and accurately, that I'm going to put a link in the show notes to, or you could just Google it, to a step-by-step, because you want to do it accurately. So you could also use disk part to do it, but that's a little bit more tricky. I'm not sure I'd recommend that. I think you want to really use the built-in Windows recovery features. So
I'll try that.
If you search for fix the MBR or fix UEFI boot, you'll find a number of articles. I would suggest not to do the one using the disk partitioner, because that you can really mess up your disk if you start messing with the disk partitions. Use the built-in Windows tools to do it, and you'll be better off.
Yeah, I see where it's lingering. It's lingering in they tell you that it would be the non-UEFI
Right. Even though you can't just delete the Linux partition and be okay, you got to kind of restore everything to the way it was. Windows recovery, if you had the Windows restore disk or Windows boot disk, you can also do recovery mode from there and fix it all up. Windows wants to be the boot manager. And as soon as it sees grub, it'll say, wait a minute, and it'll fix it all up. So just boot into your install disk, or I'll put a link in the show notes to some setup tools that'll do it. This bootrec is supposedly, I haven't ever tried this, but supposedly fixes it. And in future, when you install Linux, you can really, this is not at all uncommon. It's easy to get into trouble when you do a dual boot system. Very easy. Because Windows doesn't like to have another operating system on the hard drive. And if you just delete Linux, oh, man, you're in trouble. So, which is what you did, I think. So you got to get a little bit more. You got to do a little more work on here. We'll put a guide in the show notes that should be able to save your bacon. Speaking of Linux, I see that big news in the tech world just came out. IBM is purchasing a Linux that for many years we recommended, we used Red Hat. You remember Red Hat Linux? You ever hear that name? They were one of the first companies to actually make money distributing a free operating system called Linux. They're buying, and man, apparently it's worth a lot of money because IBM's buying Red Hat in a deal valued at $34 billion. It's IBM's largest deal ever, the third biggest in the history of U.S. tech. And it's kind of a premium. Red Hat's market capitalization is about $20 billion. So they're paying a 50% premium on their market cap, $190 a share. That shows you how important Linux has become, especially to enterprise, to business and cloud business. But wow, That is a huge deal. IBM buying Red Hat Linux. Linux, the free operating system. Linux for $34 billion. Shows there's money in free. Wow. Sean in Carlsbad, California. Hello, Sean.
Hello.
I've already
gone to the Tech Guy Labs. Free, no registration required.
Thank you.
But
didn't find what you wanted, I guess.
Well, I need it all. My situation is that I have four hard drives on my computer. Mm-hmm. It's an HP. I used a friend's operating system disk and used my key from the HP.
Okay.
So I could get, you know, rid of all the extra, what do they call it, bloatware.
Yep.
And so now...
So you have a nice fresh install of Windows.
Yeah. Well, I have a situation 6 years down the road where my SSD, 60 gig SSD, is full. So I want to do a migration to a larger hard drive.
Sure.
And I would love a fresh install, for one thing, but also I want all my settings. Last time I did this, I lost everything from bookmarks to temporary files that let things run, and I had to dig out all sorts of disks to reinstall stuff.
Yeah.
It's just a big hassle. So can I do both?
Yes, but not without a little bit of effort. I'll tell you what, we have to take a break for the top of the hour. Hang on, I can walk you through this a little bit. It is not impossible, though. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Another hour to come right after this. So the key to all of your data is your home directory. And mm-hmm. you could, if you did a perfect copy of your home directory, everything that's in that would be there. The problem is that the Windows registry is not, I don't think. That's stored in a separate place. And the problem with the Windows registry is you can't just move that over. So you can get most of what you want. For instance, the bookmarks are in your home directory. So copying your home directory will get all of that stuff. But there will be settings for programs, logins, and stuff that are unfortunately stored in the registry. And so you will lose those. Mm-hmm. There is Microsoft does this migration assistant.
Is that native to – I have Windows 7.
Yeah. You can download it from Microsoft.com. Let me think about if there's a – I'm not fond of that, but I think Windows Migration Assistant at least will go into the registry and copy critical stuff out of there. And since it's from Microsoft, you're more likely to do it without harm. This is exactly designed for doing what you want to do or somebody moving to a new computer. Let me just see –
Clonezilla as my...
Clonezilla is going to take, and not exactly with, so, actually, well, wait a minute. Now, let me think about this. So, the 60 gig drive, does this contain Windows as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, I have it's four drives. I have a data drive. I have two small 30 gig SSDs that I put, like Photoshop and some various programs. And then I've got my OS disk.
Okay. And the OS disk is the 60 gig disk.
Yeah.
Okay. So is there anything else on the OS disk besides Windows?
There is a few programs that have to put their...
Yeah. They have to be in the Windows directory.
Into the, yeah, operating.
Yeah, all right. So, and you're not changing computers. You're just swapping the 60 gig drive out for a new drive.
Yes.
Okay, you can totally, I'm sorry, this is a much easier prospect because you can make a clone out of that 60 gig drive. The only trick is that in some clone programs, it will make another 60 gig drive on your bigger 3 terabyte drive. And that you don't want. What you want it to do is take the 60 gigs and put it on the full size drive and keep the drive full. So there are a number of programs that will do that. Ease US makes CloneZilla is a Linux disk that you have to boot to, and it will work, but it's tricky. So
my goal is, and I saw Ease US that was in your show notes from earlier this year.
Yep.
One of the things though with that was that it's a free trial.
Right.
And I couldn't see what limitations were on it.
They're not free anymore. They used to be free, so I'm disappointed to hear that they're not free anymore. Another way to do this, let's see, what would be the best way to do this? Yeah, there is in Windows 7 basically a disk imaging program. They call it Windows Backup, but it is a disk imaging program. And I've used that, and you can run that. And since you have other drives, you can run that, put an entire hard drive on you need a 60 gigs free space, obviously, and then restore it. And again, the only issue is, and I don't remember if it will restore it to the larger drive, preserving the size of the larger drive. I think it will, as opposed to making a 60 gig partition. The beauty of this is you already have it and you can try it right now. If one of those other drives, those three other drives, has 60 gigs free, or actually it'd be less than that, but has a fairly big chunk free, you can use the Windows 7 disk backup is basically going to make an image.
Yeah. In fact, I was even thinking of having the new drive external to start off with and cloning it that way. So,
yeah,
eSATA and then installing it and making sure it works.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. That way you've not lost anything. Making it bootable is going to be one issue. But Microsoft's disk backup is designed to make a bootable image. CloneZilla will certainly do it. And if you feel comfortable having read the CloneZilla manual, it's just that I think a lot of people find it very challenging. Yeah. I mean, it totally will do it. It's just there's going to be a lot of switches that you have to figure out. The fresh install is a MacGuffin. You don't have to worry about that now. You've already done that. You merely want to copy what's on that 60 gig drive bit for bit onto a new larger drive. Is that right?
Well, yes, although I have to say that fresh install has been 6 years ago. So
maybe you want to do a new fresh install?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Was. So that I can, because there is just, I mean, I no longer use IE.
Yeah.
And there's tons of IE junk on there.
Okay.
And
so what you really want to do is do a Windows install on a new drive, fresh drive. That'll be a bootable one. And then figure out some way with the 60 gig drive. The nice thing is the 60 gig drive could also be made eSATA, and so it could be available. I think if you just copy the first thing to do is just copy your entire home directory over to the same place on the new drive, you'd be most of the way there. I'm looking at what the chat room. So chat room, now we have, okay, here's the plan, chat room. You got a new big drive. He wants to install Windows 7 on it. You might as well Windows 7's fine. Install Windows 7 on it clean. But then he wants to get everything from the old 60 gig drive onto it without losing any settings. No problem getting your home directory. That's easy. That's a straight copy. But I am a little concerned about stuff in the registry. So, chat room, what do you think? I'm going to defer to the wisdom of the crowd here.
Yeah, and I'm sure a registry cleaner is not.
No. So you have an eSATA enclosure that you could put that 60 gig drive in.
Yeah.
That's good because at least everything's still there, so you can mess with it. And I think then, at that point, the Windows Transfer tool will copy the data from your old to your new. EaseUS also makes a similar tool. I think if they got rid of Easy Transfer in Windows 10, but you're using Windows 7, that's still around. They do say that PC Mover Express is what they recommend from Laplink, believe it or not, now for Windows 10. That's a $45 program. Yeah, you don't want CloneZilla because that's not what you're trying to do. You're not trying to clone it. You're trying to copy your data. I have to run, but I'm sure we can get some answers for you from our chat. And we'll put them in the show notes at Tech Guy Labs. There's some ideas. He wants a clean install.
Carbonite.
Thank you, sir. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. We're talking computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We're talking smartphones, smartwatches, anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free anywhere in U.S. or Canada. You could still call us using Skype out anywhere else. 8888-ASK-LEO. Day after tomorrow, as I record this, Tuesday, October 30th, at 10 in the morning Eastern Time, Apple's going to have an event at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. And we know because they've sent out invitations, unique artistic invitations, which is kind of cool. They've never done this before. They sent out at least, I think the last count, there were 400 different designs to this Apple event. And the design is a different Apple logo each time. And underneath it, it says, "There's more in the making," which, of course, is completely non-communicative. But Apple loves doing this. And I know the Apple PR team just rubs their hands gleefully as various tech blogs try to read the tea leaves and say, "What does that mean? There's more in the making." The good news is I think we have a pretty good idea of what Apple's going to announce. And the reason I mention this, obviously next week we'll know, but this would be, today would be a bad time to go out and buy an iPad, a MacBook Air, or a Mac Mini. Consensus is pretty good, and Mark Gurman, who's the king of Apple leakers, he doesn't work at Apple, he works at Bloomberg Businessweek, but he has great resources inside of Apple, says that there will be two new iPads. And that, by the way, this is the entire Apple watching community seems to have come to consensus on this. Two new iPad Pros, an 11-inch, which will replace the 10.5-inch. So because these are going to be bezel-less, much like the newer iPhones, they'll be able to be in the it'll be in the same size iPad as the current 10.5, but the screen will be 11 inches because it'll go to the edge. Face ID that will work in sideways or upright, so it'll work in portrait or horizontal landscape mode. The current Face ID does not do that. No more home button. It'll be the same user interface as the iPhone X and XS, the swipe interface that Apple's going to put on all its iOS stuff. There will be also a larger iPad Pro. And now there's some question about this. Our sources are saying, and they could be wrong, Apple's staying mum. All they said is there's more in the making. But our sources are saying that in this case, Apple will shrink the size but keep the screen the same. So there's two ways to go. If you go edge to edge on the screen, you can either make the screen bigger on the same size device or make a smaller device with the same size screen. And they're going to do both. So, and I think that's a good thing. The 12.9 iPad was awfully big. So making it a little bit smaller with the same size screen, that sounds nice. Now, here's the other thing, and there's some debate over this. The rumor is they will no longer have lightning ports on these, as they do on the iPhones and the current iPads. They're going to put Type-C chargers and Type-C data ports on them, as they do on the MacBooks. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? Type-C chargers. And then I talked to another fella at 9 to 5 Mac, the publisher of 9 to 5 Mac, Seth Weintraub, who said, I think they're going to have both, lightning and C. So we'll find that out on Tuesday. I'm actually would be thrilled to see them release a new MacBook Air. That is a fabulous Syn. That's the one Steve Jobs introduced. It was in a manila envelope, but they haven't updated it in years. And the screen is very low resolution, so making a high-resolution, inexpensive MacBook Air would be a very good thing. They, you know, Macs are so expensive now that many schools have stopped buying them. So Apple would like to make a sub-$1,000 MacBook, and I think it'll be an updated MacBook Air. When I say sub-$1,000, I'm talking $999.99. It won't be a lot under $1,000. There'll be a new Mac Mini. This is the rumor I find hard to believe, but I have my fingers crossed. Apple hasn't updated its Mac Mini in years. I think 4 years. And this is the device that always was the cheapest Mac because it didn't include a mouse, keyboard, or monitor. It was just a little box that you would use your existing mouse, keyboard, and monitor with. I hope they do update that. It'd be nice to see modern chips, modern storage, modern connectors on a Mac Mini. A lot of people buy them. We would buy some here at our studio. It's a great way to get a full-powered Mac at a lower price. So we'll watch Tuesday. I'll get up early because it's 7 a.m. Pacific time. Apple is expected to stream it, so you can watch at the Apple website and see what they do. We'll do our own stream. I have a bad habit. I don't get invited to these anymore. So we watch the stream and comment on it. We'll do that at our podcast site, twit.tv. And next week, who knows? I don't know if I'll have a new iPad or MacBook. I might. My guess, usually the way this works, Apple announces it on a Tuesday. You could pre-order on a Friday and get it a week after. I did get the new iPhone XR, by the way, and I love it. This is a great choice. If somebody is looking for an iPhone and doesn't want to spend the $1,000 that an iPhone XS costs, $749 for a 64-gig iPhone XR. It's an LCD screen, not OLED, but it looks beautiful. It's the best battery life of any iPhone, and I think that's important. Yeah, only one camera lens, not too big deal. It's still, the photos still look great. It just doesn't have that optical zoom that you have on the iPhone X, XS, and XS Max. Fine with me. The XR, if you're looking for a new iPhone, I think is a very good choice. And it comes in colors, black and white. And there's a yellow phone. We call it the banana phone. There's a kind of baby blue phone. And one that's a kind of a rosy pink they call coral. I bought the product red, bright red phone. And it looks like a sports car. It's beautiful. Of course, it doesn't really matter what color you get because it's made of glass and it's slippery. So you're going to put it in a case. So I guess it doesn't really much matter. We'll find out Tuesday what Apple is up to. And if you have an Apple TV or you can go to the Apple website, you'll be able to watch the stream and see for yourself. There's more in the making. I will probably buy all of them, and I will talk about them next week, give you some idea. I guess the only reason I bring it up is if you're in the market for a new iPad or new Mac, stop. Don't buy it today. Never buy anything before an Apple event. Always wait. You don't know. I mean, they could announce, who knows, what new AirPods they could announce. They could announce that charging mat that they were talking about a year ago. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Stay right here. Got your Halloween costume? I got one. I'm going to be Pikachu. My favorite Pokemon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. We're getting ready for Halloween. John in Utica, New York's next. Hello, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome.
Great show.
Thank you for listening.
You're welcome. Earlier you were talking about ice on an Android.
Yeah, in case of emergency. Yeah.
Yes. I have an Android Treasure that runs Lollipop version of Android.
Yeah, that's quite old now, yeah.
Well, how I've done ice is there's a option under settings that you can put, if the phone is lost, have your phone number.
Perfect.
It shows up on the lock screen.
Perfect, yeah.
Well, it actually holds 45 characters.
Oh, good. So you can write if you just put ICE, first responders know what that means, in case of emergency.
Right.
So if you just put ICE and a phone number, first responders would immediately know what that is. And as I had mentioned, what I've been told by first responders, that's the single most important piece of information.
Right. And now, so how I did it is I left my phone number that if the phone is lost.
Good.
So I put like lost and that phone number.
Yep.
And then I was able to put ICE 1 and ICE 2.
Excellent.
Two contacts.
That's great. Yeah, I think so important to do that. And first responders now go right for the phone. They know that many phones have that ICE information. If you have an iPhone, it's in the health app. More modern Android phones actually have an entry for it in the about this phone in the settings. And older phones, that's a great way to do it. Put it on the lock screen as a lock screen message.
Yeah, it's the next best thing.
Yep.
So I thought I'd let you know.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah, keep listening. Thank you. Yeah, we're going to make that the tip of the week on the website, techguylabs.com, because everybody needs to do that. Yeah, very valuable thing you can do. Put that in case of emergency information on your phone. And in every case, the phones that support it, it's accessible before you unlock it. So they don't need to unlock your phone to find that information. And on iPhones, it's not just in case of emergency, call this number. It's also your blood type, your allergies, medications, you know, anything that they need to know. And worst case, if you're an organ donor. And that's all good stuff to put on there. Mark in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark. Welcome to... Hey, Mark, are you there?
Yeah.
Welcome.
Hey. He caught me off guard here.
I know. I'm sorry. I should have warned you. Here I come, Mark.
Hey, I'm trying to figure out on... I have a new phone, right?
Okay.
Android.
Good.
And I'm trying to figure out the WPS.
Oh, because you're trying to join the Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
Do you... so you have... Is this at home or where is this?
No, it's a home number.
Okay, so you're at home and you want to join your home Wi-Fi. Did you set up the router? Do you
No. Continue. I'm trying to plug it in right now, so I can take exactly what it is.
Okay. But let me just ask you the situation. This is at home.
Okay. Yes.
Yes, and it's your internet access at home, right?
Yeah.
And did you set up the router?
Okay, that's what I don't...
Did you set up the Wi-Fi access point in your house? Do you have a Wi-Fi access? Do you have Wi-Fi at home?
No. I'm trying to access Android on hotspot.
Ah, I see what you're saying. You want your Android phone to be the Wi-Fi access point.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I just saw it. Okay.
I know where it is. It's under network and internet. There's an entry called hotspot and tethering. Now, this is only if your cell phone carrier supports it. Sometimes they charge extra for it, sometimes not. If you have hotspot capability, turning that on will then give you usually a name for the access point. You know, I mean, it might be as simple as, and you can edit that. You could be Mark's smartphone, and it will give you a password. And you can edit that as well because the password they give you is randomly generated. So sometimes that's not very useful. So if you see on mine, the hotspot name, the randomly generated hotspot name is Pixel_2388. So you might want to edit that. And then under mine, it says hotspot password and it puts dots, which is silly because... When you tap the dots, then it'll show it. And you can enter any password you want at that point. It needs to be of a certain length. In my case, I was doing this in the car for our kid. So I said, well, look for my Pixel. And actually, I should change that name, let's say, to Leo's Pixel. And then I made the password something he would remember, which is Mikey Likes It, because his name is Michael. And Mikey Likes It was the password. That's all he had to enter. So that's what those are. You, when it asks you what kind of security, you definitely want to use a password. You don't want other people walking by to be able to use your phone.
I know, exactly. So it's like WPA2PSK.
Yeah, that's the security.
That's what it asked me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
But it says none.
No, don't choose none.
When
don't,
I go
Well, I know, but I can't access the WPA.
Is it grayed out? You can't tap it and choose it?
No, they won't let me.
What?
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm like, what the?
What?
You know, with this phone, it doesn't let me do it. The previous
It should let you
this
do it.
It does not.
So the choice is there, but you can't tap it and choose it.
Right, and they won't let me get any security, and it's just saying none. You know?
Yeah, none's not good because
I don't know what to do. I know what to do.
Yeah, you want a password, otherwise people go walking by you say, "Oh, I see Mark's Android. Let me join that."
Exactly.
I'm not sure why that would be turned off.
Well, without saying the phone that it is.
You could say the phone. We have no secrets, you and me.
Okay. It's Motorola.
Is it one of the new Moto Zs, or is it a G5 or G6?
It's G something.
It's a G, okay.
Leo, I'll
are you the only user of the phone?
Yes. So, here's the problem, man. The phone that I had previously, it was a blue, okay?
Yeah.
And I was able to go WP. Now, there's nothing. It says none and WPA. PSK.
Well, you want WPA2 PSK. You don't want none. But it won't let you select it.
It won't let me select it. Exactly.
I'm wondering if, you know, see that those entries are part of Android. Maybe that phone is telling you, I can't do that because not all Wi-Fi access points can do it. It might be that your this Motorola G is saying, I'm sorry, I only do it. Geez, they'd at least want to do WEP, which admittedly is broken, but it's better than nothing. None is not really the choice you want. So I'm not sure why that entry, and the entry's on the phone. I'm looking at mine right now. When you're setting up the Wi-Fi hotspot, you tap the security, and you want to choose WPA, which is Wireless Protected Access, version 2, and PSK, you don't need to know. This stands for pre-shared key. You don't care about that, really. All you care about is security and that it's on. I'm not sure why you can't tap that button that chooses that. Unless the phone doesn't support it. And it may be that it doesn't. Older phones might not. Anybody knows, give us a ring. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's not that he can't see it. He can't select it. It's grayed out. I'm not sure why that is. Oh, let me tell you. Do you have a business? You probably do a lot to keep your business safe. Keep bad guys off your network. You don't want hackers roaming around in your business. But you know what the weak point in every business is? Your nice employees. We love our employees. But the problem is they're nice. And when a bad guy calls and says, hi, this is the boss's son, and I need the access code to the front door. They're nice, but they're not going to get. On the other hand, what if they get an email that says, by name, this is the boss, and I need that report, or here's something I want you to work on. Click this attachment. What are they going to do then? Maybe click the attachment? You need Prilock Security. P-R-I-L-O-C-K. Prilock Security is the security training that will keep you and your business safe. Security awareness training taught actually by a hacker. It's fun to take. I took it. And I have to say, I took it because I wanted, before we did the ad, I want to say, make sure that everything they say is right on. It is super right on. I learned stuff. I didn't know what a candy drop is. You know what a candy drop is? That's when bad guys go into the company parking lot and they put a few nice looking 64 gigabyte USB drives on the ground. So, it fell out of somebody's pocket, right? Employee sees it, picks it up, says, oh, look, I found a 64 gig drive. That's awesome. I'm going to use that. Plugs it into his laptop. Without his knowledge, it infects the laptop and the whole company can go down. Ransomware everywhere. 91% of all successful hacks start with a phishing email. sometimes we call it spear phishing because it's targeted at your business. That's if you don't train your employees, the hackers will, and you will not like the result. PryLock Security offers a best-of-breed security training platform. And it's so cool because not only do they get the training, and by the way, in the training, they actually learn how to think like a hacker, and they will build phishing emails, so which is a very useful exercise to understand how you make an email work so that somebody's going to click that link. And then afterwards, and I love this. By the way, the security awareness training has a 10-question final assessment that's often needed for compliance mandates. So, that, of course, it's perfect for compliance. But then afterwards, they do an extra thing that I think is great. They schedule and run 24 additional random phish tests. So, on average, twice a month, your employees will get a phishing email targeted at them, crafted for them. If they click on it, if they fall for it, they get a big page saying, we told you, we tried to teach you, we're teaching, and it'll automatically enroll clickers in specific injection training videos. If they click too much, it'll email a report to admin, report analytics in real time 24/7. So you get all of this training plus this kind of constant awareness raising information. And I've gotten some of those mails and it's fun because it's fun to go, oh, I know what you're doing. I know what you're up to. Makes the employee feel good. And if they fall for it, makes you feel good that they're getting extra training. You get a 3-day baseline phishing test, a custom user page for each employee with tons of resources for them. I love this system, and it is 70% less than comparable programs. A small company, 25 employees, $395 with 1 year with the 1 year plan. They even have a plan for mom and dad and grandparents or special friends, with a single license gift card that tests them with 2 tests a month for a full year. So there's a solution for everybody. Check it out. You never can learn all the ways hackers can con and trick you, but PryLock will show your employees the psychology used against them so they and you aren't the next victim. Learn more at PryLock, PryLock.com/twit. And we've got a promo code. Use the promo code Leo. You'll save 30%. Nice. PryLock.com/twit. Promo code Leo. Your business needs this training. PryLock.com/twit. Promo code Leo. Fred in Columbia, Maryland. Hello, Fred.
Hello, Leo. How are you, my friend?
I am well, my friend. How are you?
Fine. I'm an 87-year-old Korean War veteran that's legally blind and very active with low vision groups.
Fantastic.
I have a wonderful app that's available only on Apple right now.
Tell us about
free.
It. Yes.
It's developed by Microsoft. It's called Seeing, SEEINGAI.
What does it do?
It has 8 options. It allows you to read text, read documents, scan barcodes, take facial pictures and describe a person, takes pictures in a room. Also tells you whether there's a light on in the room or not by a pitch.
Oh, that's so cool. So it narrates the world around you.
Right. It's called Seeing AI, and it's only available on Apple devices at this moment, but it's developed by Microsoft. It has a tutorial built in with each of the options.
That is awesome. Have you ever seen the program Be My Eyes? Do you know that program?
Yeah, that's the one I heard the other day, and I knew the name while you were talking about it.
I know. Thank you. Yeah, somebody typed it in.
That's wonderful, the one also. I have another one that reads money, but this also reads money, this app.
That's cool. Now, if you don't have an iPhone, if you have an Android phone, Be My Eyes works on Android, but that uses human volunteers. Which
right.
is very
That's
interesting,
correct.
And that was the story a couple of weeks ago, was that 1 million people have now volunteered on a Be My
yeah,
Eyes.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. But I have every device in my house that's electronic. I belong to a group in my area where I live where I give talks. I have the Amazon Echo. I have a Siri on my iPhone SE. I have an iPad Pro, and I use all these devices by voice. And I also have devices to scan letters and read them back to me completely.
Fred, you're awesome.
I have a device that reads barcodes in the grocery store and describes the item fully. I have one that reads my prescription labels. I also have a device that has a 24-inch monitor that magnifies up to 64 times with 6 different contrasts.
Now, Fred, let me ask you, when did you lose your sight?
about 5 years ago.
Okay. And how did you get all these things? How did you get all this help? Did you go somewhere to get help? Or
I belong to a low vision group at the senior center that I go to, and we have talkers that come in, and I became quite active in the community. And
that's
people
great.
Come to my house to look at all my devices to help them that are visually impaired or physically impaired. I have a lot of devices for that also.
You're paying it forward. Were you a geek before this?
Yes, I was. I used to build. I'm a retired pharmacist, but
oh,
I used to have it. I used to know HTML and Adobe Photoshop.
Oh, great.
I did all this, but I can't do any of that anymore. So this is my gift to people all over the world that want to be able to develop and use that technology that's available. Most people are not aware of most things and are unable to cope with a lot of situations. This has made my life like 180 degrees better.
Absolutely. I always am looking for places people can go because I get calls from blind users all the time who want some help. And I mentioned, you know, there's the Independent Living Resource Center. There's Lighthouse for the Blind. There's a variety of organizations.
There are. The National Institute of the Blind and Physically Disabled send me discs on books.
Nice.
And also magazines I get
nice.
Every week.
Nice.
So I also, you know, and I can also, I don't mind giving my phone and email address if people want information on sources that are available through the state and for the federal government. I'd be glad to help them with it.
I don't want to give your phone out, but I don't mind, if you don't mind getting some email.
I don't mind a bit.
Okay.
I'll give you my email address is Drug King Fred. You're going to laugh. I'm a retired pharmacist.
Drug King Fred. He's not a drug kingpin. He is a former pharmacist. Drug King
Fred. @gmail.com.
@gmail.com. Well,
I'm also very active with medical cannabis right now. I do talks on that with people.
Interesting. I know that that's been used for glaucoma patients.
That's correct. The CBD, the low-end product, is not hyperactive.
Yeah.
Quite well. The glaucoma works in anxiety, sleep. Pain of various types. I'm not endorsing it, but I say it works quite well. The CBD.
CBD.
Yeah. It comes from hemp.
Right.
Which is a member of the same family, except you can get it without a prescription.
And nowadays in California and other states, it is legal, and it's not as psychoactive as pot. You're not getting high on it.
That's right. Pot has THC, which
right.
is the hyperactive
right.
part. This contains no more than 0.3% of THC.
When did you retire, Fred?
I retired about 5 years ago when I lost my vision.
Oh,
I was working on Indian reservations for the last 10 years.
Well, you are such an inspiration. I am so thrilled you called. Thank you for your service back in the Korean War, but you've continued your service, and you're doing a great thing.
Yeah, and I got you before a couple months ago, and we talked, and I was surprised I was able to get through because it's 3 hours difference on the East Coast. When will this be on your podcast? I listen to them all the time.
Oh, bless you, Fred. This is right now live on about 200-some stations across the country. And then after the show, we package it up as a podcast, which you can download from the website, techguylabs.com. And it usually takes it takes anywhere from 2 to 4 hours after the show for our editors to package it up and crunch it up. There's also a YouTube version. And you can even subscribe if you have.
I use it on Amazon Echo. I get it all.
Yeah, you could just ask the Echo. You could say, Echo, listen to the Tech Guy show, and it'll do the latest one. Yeah.
That's what I do. I get Saturday and Sunday every week.
Oh, bless you, Fred. This is episode 1536, and you're in hour three segment, I'd say segment three, so you should be able to skip ahead to that. You don't have to listen to all those other questions. Just listen to you.
You're an inspiration to me. You're amazing.
Me?
I pass your name on to everybody.
You're an inspiration to me. I mean, I'm you're and
thank
you know
you very much.
No meaning no disrespect, but you at the age of 87 are sharp, obviously sharp as a tack. You didn't let your disability get in your way, and you're making a huge difference, and I hope I'm half as alive as you are at that age.
I am right now, and I like to give right now.
Bless you,
the world,
Fred,
has been good to me.
Well,
there's a lot of bad people out there. Let's talk about nice things.
You know what? I decided today to do that because, of course, the news has been horrific.
I don't want to listen to the news anymore.
No, not me neither. I just want to, you know, most of the world is filled with people like you, Fred, good people. And we got to remember that.
And I got rid of Facebook, Twitter, and everybody
me
else.
Me too. Get rid of that. That's just putting that bad stuff in your head. The world is full of wonderful people. There are a few apples. It's just, but they get all the attention, don't they? Let's not give them any attention.
Leo, you're wonderful. And pass my email address on. And anybody that wants information about anything that's available, I have an immense resources, really.
Thank you, Fred. DrugKingFred@gmail.com. Leo Laporte, what a great call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We needed that today. Really needed that one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. I got an email from a mom last year at this time. A kid dressed up as me for Halloween. Now, that's scary. She sent the picture. It was just awesome. Just awesome. Simon in Yorktown, Virginia is next. Hi, Simon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk to you again. I didn't know if I'd get through to you today. It's so late.
But... Well, your timing was good. You just great. Made it.
Listen, I've got you on speaker because I'm trying to take notes. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you great, yeah.
Okay. I encountered for the first time in my life, and I'm 77 years old, the blue screen of death.
Oh, no.
And
you've been lucky. That's all I can say. You've been really lucky.
Yeah, I have been. I tried for probably 10 or 12 hours over the course of the day yesterday and part of the night before, and it'd come back for a little while, and then I'd do something, it would crash right away. And I finally got on to where it stayed on for a little while, and I said, you know, maybe it's a Chrome problem because I've been using Chrome as my browser, and I think I succeeded in getting it over on Edge, but I don't remember for sure. But I wanted to check an email, so I tried that, and then it crashed again, and I think maybe it went to Chrome to get the email.
I'll tell you an important tip. Now, first of all, which version of Windows are you on?
10.
Okay, so modern versions of Windows, and this goes back probably to Vista and NT, modern versions of Windows, it's very hard for a program to cause a blue screen of death. They operate in a space we call user space or user land, that if they crash, they crash, and they can, you know, do a lot of things, but they can't crash the hardware. They can't crash the computer. The operating system is protected. The only software that can cause a blue screen of death is driver software, because a driver software has to operate at such a low level in what we call ring zero. It's operating at the kernel level, not the user level. And so a crashing driver can cause a blue screen. The other thing that can cause a blue screen is hardware, you know, a flaky hardware, a power supply that isn't providing adequate power, or RAM memory that's glitching, something like that, a motherboard that's glitching. So it can't just be Chrome. It doesn't have access to that level. Chrome will crash. I'm not saying it won't. But on the other hand, if it's happening when you do a certain thing, it may be the video drivers, for instance, are crashing it, because those can cause blue screens. The problem is very difficult to figure out why something's blue screening. Can you reproduce the steps every time and it'll blue screen every time?
I do. And I'm just wondering, if I tell you what it gives me as a stop code, would that give you a clue?
Yeah, sometimes. The problem is a computer, they're so dumb. The error message they give you, it may or may not be germane. What does it say?
Well, nine times it told me it was a bad pool header.
Yeah, that's a memory problem.
The one other thing it identified was page fault at non...
Yeah.
I can't even...
Page fault means something tried to write somewhere it shouldn't.
Okay.
So this is kind of the same. So tell me the steps. You said, so what is it that, like, if you did it right now, it would force a blue screen of death?
The last time, just before I called you, that's exactly what happened.
So what are those steps? Say it again.
I just hit the power button, and, you know, the power came on, and it crashed right away.
Right away. Okay. Right. So usually that means it's a hardware issue, and then something's going wrong with the hardware, which means it's not the browser. It's not something you can fix just by saying, oh, I'm going to use a different browser, I'm going to use different software. It's something lower level than that. Did you somebody in the chat room saying, are you trying to print something? It's true that if you had a corrupt print driver, which could cause a blue screen, and every time you booted up, it tried to load that, that would cause it. It's probably, though, a driver that's getting loaded when you first turn on the computer. How far does it get before it blue screens?
Well, this last time it was instantaneous. Before that, a few times it gave me some time, and I managed to get a little research in, and bad drivers was one of the main causes.
Well,
one of the things I tried to do is go in and modify, you know, change out or delete stop some drivers. But I got confused doing that. I probably did the wrong thing.
Here's one diagnostic. And unfortunately, in Windows 10, it's a different way to do this. But if you can start Windows 10 in safe mode, and you would then not load the majority of drivers. Your screen would look terrible because you'd have a VGA display driver and so forth.
I had that last night. I got into safe mode.
And did it run reliably in safe mode?
Well, it did, but in safe mode is when I was trying to do these correct
nobody wants to stay in safe mode. But if you can boot up in safe mode, usually that means that something that's loading, some driver that's loading not in safe mode is causing the problem. So if it was completely reliable in safe mode, almost always I look at the video drivers. So the first thing I would do is get newer video drivers for your machine. Is your machine from a major manufacturer?
It's a Dell.
Okay. So go, you might need to do this in safe mode or another computer, but go to Dell and go to that area for specifically that computer. You know, you have a Dell a service number. Use that to get to the exact page and download all of the drivers for that system and reinstall them. Sometimes that will make it stabler, because then you're replacing those drivers with something more up to date. I would bet that's the first thing I would do, and I would bet that that's what's going on. So safe mode ran okay?
It did until I started, you know, trying to do some corrective actions, and I was following instructions that I got
on the internet.
Oh no, I got them from Microsoft.
Oh, okay, you know, good. That's
getting
good.
Through that is a job in itself.
Oh, I know.
Loaded that, and then I transferred it onto Chrome on my Chromebook. So I still have that available.
Yeah.
For reference. But
what kind of thing were they having you do?
I was so confused. I'd have to go. It would take me a long time.
Yeah. The problem with doing stuff and you don't know what you're doing, you can really get in all sorts of mischief that way.
I appreciate that. And it's, you know, my wife has said, it's time for you to get a new computer. And I said, well, hopefully I can get this done. And I was thinking,
Here's the real thing to do. Once you go into safe mode, hit Windows key and type recovery and go into a recovery mode that will let you kind of reinstall Windows. It'll keep your data. There's various levels. There's one level that will erase your drive and you'll lose all your data. But there are several levels that will let you refresh Windows without erasing any data. And Windows 10 has some very good recovery modes. I would definitely try those. You can do those from safe mode. So I would see if any of those tools, you have a reset this PC, which is pretty good. If you do the reset this PC and choose keep my files, it'll refresh the system without getting rid of anything you want to keep. You have a backup of everything?
All my data. I'm not worried about my data. I have all that.
Well, worst case, you can wipe the drive and start over if you've got a good backup.
Well, the thing is, I want to replace the drive anyway with an SSD.
Oh, well, now's the time.
Now's a great time.
That's the time. And the only problem is if it's a hardware problem other than drivers, if it's, you know, maybe a motherboard issue or whatever, you might be replacing the drive and the computer will still be problematic. If it is, then it's much more serious. And your wife is right. And I think giving spousal approval, buying a new computer is not a bad thing to do. Thanks so much to Michael Cozy, our musical director, to Kim Schaffer for answering the phones, to you for being here. I would like to do this again next weekend with you. Will you come? All right. We'll see you then. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.